The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So when I was in India, I met an Indian Vipassana teacher named Manindraji. And one of the common teachings that he gave was if it's not simple, it's not Vipassana. And then to me personally, he said, because I did a kind of a silly thing, I won't admit what I did, but when I told him, he said, "Gil, it's important to be simple, but not a simpleton." Anyway, if it's not simple, it's not Vipassana. And one of the simplest ways of defining mindfulness is the recognition of what's happening as it's happening. The simple, basic recognition of what's happening in the moment as it's occurring. If it's already occurred, and the mind, you know, is thinking retrospectively, then that's retrospective thinking. It's no longer mindfulness. And if you're anticipating what's going to happen, that's anticipatory thinking. But that's not mindfulness. Mindfulness sits right at the juncture where the present goes into the past and where the future arrives into the present. The present moment, that's kind of the place where mindfulness is. And so it's relatively simple in and of itself. What's difficult to do is to remember to do it. Because there's powerful forces of the mind to be anywhere but in the present moment, to be thinking a lot about the past, the future, concerns, fantasy, whatever goes on. But at some point, people who do mindfulness practice, they catch on that being present, being mindful, being in the present moment, is a valuable thing to do. There's something that's very alive or meaningful, or it's something that seems very nourishing, valuable in doing that. And it feels like something that they would like to do more of. And one of the great questions people have, what I really delight when people come to me with it, is the question, yes, I'm learning to be mindful in meditation, but how do I do this in my daily life? How do I bring it into my life? It's a wonderful question, because mindfulness is not meant to be only something we do in meditation. It's supposed to be something that's maybe even more important to have in our ordinary life and how we meet our life. It's support for really being here. So how do we do that? And then occasionally I meet people who say they wish they could be on retreats more often, or they wish they could be in a monastery someplace. And partly it's a desire to be able to be more continuous, more engaged, more wholeheartedly in the practice itself. And they feel like in their ordinary daily life, there's too many demands, there's too many things pulling them this way and that way. It's too hard to be in the present moment because of all the things that are going on in ordinary lay life. If only I could be a monastic, if only I could be on retreat, then I could just, you know, really get into the practice. But the difference between a monastic life and a lay life is not that great. If we understand what the differences are, I think maybe it helps us in bringing practice to daily life. Most monasteries are not meditation centers where you go and meditate, you know, 16 hours a day. Most Buddhist monasteries, people work, they sleep, they eat, they hang out with each other, they talk, they go to Dharma talks. They kind of many things that ordinary lay practitioners do in the West, or in the world, things that people do in the monastery. From a distance, people often think the monastery is an idyllic place, like everyone there must be enlightened, and everything must be very harmonious. And maybe such monasteries exist, but I have still not found one. Because once you get into the community itself, you find that just maybe, you know, more often than not in these monasteries, that it's the people who most need to be there who are there. And so they're there because of, you know, there's challenges for them in how they live their lives, challenges in their inner life. And so they're there to find a way to work with it, but they're not always that skillful yet and figured out how to be together in community. And so monasteries are a place where people rub up against each other. And there's a story I like to tell when I was working in the kitchen monastery, I was the kitchen manager, and someone working under me said, "Gil, can we step outside for a minute? I want to talk to you." We stepped outside, and he said, "Gil, if you weren't so sincere, I'd punch you out." So, you know, so much for the idyllic, harmonious, you know, everybody's getting along kind of monastery. And so, you know, we had to work out our different differences, and was that working out our differences, finding our way. And so one of the expressions they have in some Buddhist monasteries is that living together in that kind of environment, you're like stones in a river that are rounding off the rough edges, rolling along with each other. So some of the rough, unformed or difficult edges that we have, we run into other people in the monastery, and so that's where we work it out. So if you're having difficulty with a coworker, for example, and say, "Oh, I wish I could be in the monastery," be careful what you ask for. It might be that your work environment is your monastery. Maybe that's where it's difficulty you have with your coworkers, the very thing that monastics are working with as well. But in the monastery, you can't so easily escape. You're just there, and you're living together, and working together, and doing everything together. So one of the reasons to be in a monastic environment, for example, there's many good reasons for it. It can be, for some people, a wonderful lifestyle for practice. But one of the nice things, and what attracts people to it, is the idea that you can kind of practice more continuously. You can kind of submerge yourself in the world of practice and be engaged kind of in much more thoroughly, fully, in all times of your life. And to some degree, that's true. But the difference of how people practice in daily life in the monastery for the average monastic practicing is only a matter of degree. And I would say that if you could be mindful 10% of your day, you're going to get benefit. If you could be mindful 20% of the day, you're probably getting as much mindfulness in as a monastic does in their ordinary daily life. Rather than thinking that they're going around being 100% mindful because they're living in that kind of environment, they're just doing it, you know, somewhat better than you. And I know some of the people in some of the monasteries, and I'm convinced that some of you are much more mindful than some of those monastics living your life. Some monastics are really excellent practitioners, and, you know, maybe they're getting up to close to 100% how much they're mindful. But there's a wide range. So what I'm trying to tell you is that in your daily life, ordinary lay life, you don't have to bump up your daily mindfulness that far to begin getting some of the same benefits that someone gets living in a monastery. Some of it has to do with just beginning to increase the amount of mindfulness you have, maybe by degrees, not, you know, maybe double what you do from 10 to 20 or 5 to 10, whatever you can do. But it makes a big difference. The other is about the monastery has to do with an attitude about the challenges that come along, the difficulties, life situation. I think in the monastery, people have much more the attitude that everything is supposed to be practice. Everything is something you're supposed to address and meet with practice. And people in lay life don't often have that kind of understanding. They think, oh, the real practice is if I come to, you know, is my morning meditation when I meditate. That's the practice. Or if I come to a meditation center, that's where the practice is. So I have to get there. But being home, washing the dishes, that's not practice. that's just something you get over as quickly as you can. Having challenges with a co-worker, that's not practice. That's just having challenges with a co-worker. It's just a drag. It just makes my life more difficult and gets in the way of my practice. So in a monastery, there's no idea that things are getting in the way. The idea is that, you know, if it's in a monastery, everything is meant to be material for practice. So it's possible to bring that attitude towards our daily life as well as lay people, where we embrace and look at everything that happens as an opportunity to practice, which means an opportunity to certainly be mindful and present for what's happening, try to have some degree of mental stability or equanimity in the midst of what's happening, and to begin having some insight about what's really going on in this moment as we're practicing. What's going on, especially with our own mind? Are we caught in attachments? Are we caught in aversion? Are we caught in our judgments and thoughts and ideas? What's going on for us? What's really happening here? Practicing in daily life sometimes is not easy, but the fact that it's not easy doesn't mean that it's not useful. In fact, sometimes the more difficult it is, the more it represents something that's really important for us to work with and explore. In fact, if it was just really easy, the practice, maybe you should do something else. Or maybe you should go someplace where you're challenged more. Because there are times when you really want the practice or your life to really put you up against the places where you are challenged, where things are difficult for you, where you're triggered, where you're, you know, you get annoyed and irritated, where you get caught up in things. Because sometimes if you're just coasting along, you're not really working on what's happening in the deep inside, not really discovering it. So part of what you can do to help make your daily life a richer experience for practice is to embrace whatever's going on as practice. Try not to have the attitude, if I can just finish this, then I can really get to the practice. If I can just, you know, whatever it is, if the practice is over there. If only I can just, you know, finish, you know, cleaning all these laundries or getting all these kids to bed or getting to school. If only I can do this, then I can practice. That attitude is not helpful. If you have to do things, if you have things you have to do, see if there's some modicum, some way that you can bring a sense of attention, presence, engagement, and an attitude that it's worthwhile to do as an area of self-discovery, as an area to discover freedom, equanimity. Again, it's not necessarily easy, but even 1% attitude like that is better than 0%. If it's 0%, then if you 100% your attitude is, there's no practice here, I'm just going to get this over with quickly so I can get to my practice, then chances are that there'll be no benefit, no practice benefit. But if you have the attitude, oh, this is practice, this is difficult, it's a drag, I wish it wasn't this way, but this is practice, then you'll benefit to the degree to which you take that seriously and engage in it. So it's possible to go through the whole day and see everything as practice. So there's two things I'd like to offer you today that I think it's relatively simple things that can really enhance the value of practicing, bringing mindfulness to your daily life. One thing is to do one thing at a time. And the other thing is a steadiness of purpose. Hold the course. When you have a purpose you're set yourself to do, within reason, hold the course. And I'll talk about both. So doing one thing at a time. If you're driving your car, you could be listening to the radio. You could be planning what you're going to have for dinner. You could be somehow fidgeting because you're irritated at the last person who could kind of cut you off in the traffic. And you're kind of paying attention to the traffic, just enough to be safe, just enough. But then, you know, you're you get a text message. And so, you know, well, you kind of wait at least until the stop sign, look at it, you know. There's all this stuff going on. And we live in a distracted age where it's very easy to be distracted by all the different things going on. So to do one thing at a time would be just drive. When you're driving, just drive. Keep the radio off. Certainly keep the phone away from you, even if there's a text or a phone call. Know your mind well enough to know if you're thinking about dinner or thinking about other things. And then see if you can practice mindfulness of what you're actually doing, which is driving. And it is a somewhat complicated thing, but it's fascinating to watch yourself as you drive carefully. Usually, if you're driving well, your eyes are moving, you know, on the road, looking in the rearview mirror, looking in the side view mirror. You're kind of keeping track of what's going on. It's kind of fascinating to watch how the mind keeps track of everything if you're really alert and paying attention. And so you're really there for that experience. And maybe also you use your ears to hear the traffic around you and hear when someone pulls up behind you or something. And so you stay and be present for the driving. Some people even kind of have a little mental noting that you do. They just say, driving, driving, just be here, just drive. And it's possible to be engaged in driving in such a way that you arrive more relaxed than when you left. And I noticed that many years ago that I would turn on the radio mostly to listen to music, sometimes to listen to the news. And I kind of enjoyed doing it. And I could feel that the attraction to doing it was the pleasure of listening. So it was very tempting to go for that pleasure. But it took a while to realize that even though there was pleasure in doing it, I arrived less calm or less settled listening to the radio than if I had no radio on at all. At least for me, that's how it worked for me. And so it was kind of like, you know, I could feel the pull for the pleasure of listening because it was innocent pleasure, right? Who can deny me the simple pleasure of listening to music? But I realized that if I wanted to have a, you know, relaxing, settled driving experience, that I felt enhanced by it and not a little bit slightly drained by it, that I keep the radio off and just drive, very simply, just be here. Just do this one thing. If you're eating a meal, if you're eating with other people, maybe the social thing to do is to talk with them. But if you're eating alone, if you have occasion to eat alone, it can be very nice sometimes to eat without doing anything else but eating. And certainly sit down when you eat. If you're eating on the run and just kind of stuffing yourself, you know, you're losing an opportunity. You're doing more than one thing at a time. But if you're going to eat, then put the food on the table and sit down and just eat. When I was in the monastery, I went to the, maybe it's a little bit extreme, but in order to really be present for the eating, when I was chewing, I just wanted to chew. So partly because I'm a fast eater, what I would do is I would put the spoon or the fork down after I put the food in my mouth. I'd take a fork full of food, put it in my mouth, and then put the fork down on the table, and then I would just chew. When I swallowed, I'd pick up the fork again. And I started doing that because if I didn't do that, then if the fork stayed in my hand, then as soon as I had put food in my mouth, the shovel would be up in front of the hole ready for, you know, it to open, you know, for the next thing. So I was kind of like doing two things at once. And you might think it's pretty silly, this idea, but to have an enhanced experience of just doing one thing at a time where the mind focuses itself and engages itself in this one thing as if it's the most important thing is a way of developing strong mindfulness. It's also a way of developing concentration, and it's also a way of developing an undistracted mind where we're learning to overcome the distractions that we so easily give into. So I know that if I sit down to eat my meal and I also want to read the news at the same time, which seems innocent enough, but if I'm really paying attention to what happens while I'm reading the news and eating, actually, I'm not even doing those two things. I'm actually doing three or four different things at once. I'm thinking about this and that, and I'm more easily kind of off my guard or not really so present in a clear way. But if I sit down and just do eat by myself and just eat and don't read any news, then I'm developing the mind's ability to be present in a heightened way. It's easy to say, well, this is ridiculous. You know, I have important things to do. I don't have time to read the news otherwise. And, you know, it's an innocent pleasure and, you know, all these things. And then later in the day you say, you know, boy, I wish I had time to meditate. I don't have enough time to be mindful. You had your time there. That was your time. If you thought that meditation, only mindfulness only in during meditation time, then you're shortchanging yourself. That was your time to really do it. And if you thought it was silly to do it in that situation, I'd like to suggest that it's probably less silly than sitting and meditating. If things are silly, that's pretty silly. It's not silly, but if that's the way you think. So the idea of just doing one thing at a time. And it doesn't have to mean that you do everything you do is one thing at a time. But it's possible you can do that more. Because that's one of the benefits I got from being in the monastery. A huge benefit for me was learning the value of doing one thing at a time. In the monastery, I was, for 3 months, I was the monastery dishwasher. And that was a great job because the monastery had, for the first time, had installed a dishwashing machine. Up until that time, they washed all the dishes by hand, and all the pots and everything, dishes. And they needed a crew of something like 5 people, because it was a big monastery, to do the dishes. They built a dishwashing shack, and they had a dishwashing machine in there with a kind of a counter, that window that people put all the dirty dishes on. And they assigned me to be the first dishwasher for the dishwashing machine. And they didn't know how much, you know, they just thought that I could do it all. And I didn't know anything, so I was young. So it turned out to be, I had to work really fast. And the idea that in the monastery you do things slowly and meticulously, you know, just really there for that plate and scrub it carefully and really be with it and feel it and then put it down with 2 hands. And, you know, that's one way to be mindful that's valuable. But I wouldn't have gotten the dishes done because I had... So what doing one thing at a time meant in the dishwashing shack was not literally one thing at a moment, but all I did, the one thing I did was I only washed dishes. I was the dishwasher, 100%. I surrendered to washing the dishes. And it became like a dance. And I was twirling and swirling and, you know, my 2 hands were doing 2 different things, you know, but I was so present and so engaged in this dance that by the end of the the shift, my mind was very still. Very still. And I would go meditate and my mind would go to sit down and it was stiller than it would usually do when I went to meditate. I was so focused, so absorbed in that activity. The mind wasn't going anywhere else, just right there. So doing one thing at a time doesn't mean you have to do things slowly and meticulously that sometimes people associate with mindfulness. It means that you do the activity that's needed to be done in the appropriate way for the activity, but you surrender to it, you give yourself over to it, so that's all you're doing. That's the thing you're doing. And then a little footnote was that when I stopped doing it, they signed other people to the dishwasher, and after a while I walked by the dishwashing shack and saw that they had assigned 3 people to do what I did alone, because, you know, after a while they realized that it didn't work for one person to do it. But it worked for me, but it was hard work. So the idea of just if you're doing something, just do this. If you're folding your laundry, just fold your laundry. If you're putting the dirty clothes in the laundry, in the washing machine, Just do that. Put that in. Can you really be there? Can you notice how you're not really there? Just like in meditation, the mind wanders off and you're thinking about other things. So you bring it back. And so maybe the laundry is, you take that chunk of time you're doing your laundry as a meditation time, as a mindfulness time. So that it isn't that after the ecstasy, the laundry, it's the laundry is the ecstasy. You just give yourself to just doing that one thing. You know, just... So doing one thing at a time. And if you do that 10% of the time, 5% of the time, you'll benefit tremendously. And you'll learn how to be mindful. It'll support your meditation practice. It's a way of continuing some of the benefits of meditation, formal meditation, into daily life. The other thing that's useful to do is a steadiness of purpose. And what I mean by this is that if you have a purpose that you're going to do, follow through. And it's kind of like doing one thing at a time, but really kind of follow through if it, within reason. So for example, many years ago, I noticed that I was going to the laundry area in the small little house that I lived in, the house apartment that I lived in, and it was I was going to take the laundry from the washing machine to the dryer. That was the purpose, to get to the washing machine to transfer the clothes. And on my way there, I was pulled aside by four things along the way. There was something that needed to be taken care of over here. There was an interesting magazine over here. There was the kitchen over there with food for a snack. I don't remember what it was, but there were four different things. And so it took me quite a bit longer to get to the laundry area than if I just held that purpose steadily. There was nothing, I had lots of time. There was nothing immoral about doing these other things along the way. But we can benefit more by holding steady, to train ourselves. Then when we set a purpose within reason, hold the course. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to follow through and not let myself get distracted, not let my mind wander off into some other thing. And even though it's innocent enough to do these other things, there's something about training the mind to stay focused, stay steady, to be relaxed, and not being pulled off by other ideas and other desires that might come along. Stay steady with what you're doing. And you have to be somewhat wise about this. I mean, you know, just, but when you can, small things of your daily life, there are times when you really benefit from hold steady with what you're doing. So I told someone this story today, that when I was in the monastery in Japan, I went in late in the evening to talk to someone in the kitchen, one of the cooks there, a monk. And he was chopping probably vegetables. And I asked him a question, and he put down his knife and stood up straight and answered it, my question. Then he picked up his knife and started chopping again. I asked a second question. He put down the knife, stood up straight, looked at me, and talked to me directly. Okay, that was nice. I'm kind of slow sometimes. But he picked up his knife to chop again, and so I asked him a third question. He put down the knife, stood up straight, looked at me, and he said, "Gil-san, you know, I'm really here to do just one thing at a time, and I'm chopping, I'm just chopping, and if I have to stop for all your questions, I'm not going to get my work done." He probably said even nicer than that, but I got the message. So I said, "Okay, thank you." So I left. And so he was just, he had a purpose he wanted to do, and he wanted to have, he was engaged, this is the purpose he wanted to engage in, was just the chopping right then and there. So hold it steady. This is what I'm doing. Hold it steady. And so there might be small ways or big ways in your life that when you have a task to do, that you can not only do just one thing at a time, but you can hold the course. Stay with it. Stay with it. Stay with it. And these two things, doing one thing at a time and holding the course have partly a function to help you highlight for you how difficult it is to do those things. To highlight how the mind wants to do other things or wants to multitask. Highlight how you want to be you allow yourself to be interrupted. There's desires, aversions, things come up. Distractions come up in your mind. And part of the function of doing one thing at a time, holding steady with that thing, is to help show you how you get distracted, how your mind grabs onto desires and aversions, how your mind works, that you can't see very clearly if you're simply following the whim of every desire that comes along. If you have infinite freedom to just act whatever you want, you might not really see what drives you, what motivates you, what's going on under there. But if you simplify your life and just do one thing at a time and hold the course of what you're doing, then what'll become clear is that you believe that what you're doing is not interesting, that the grass is greener somewhere else, that there's better things to do, or you don't like what you're doing, it's boring, and you want to entertain yourself and get away. Or it could be that you have a strong tendency to get anxious because you have this long to-do list. And that anxiety is very motivating you to kind of rush, very motivating you to multitask, to do something. Or you have a strong tendency to want to go for comfort. And it's not so comfortable what you're doing. So you're kind of looking for a way out to get comfortable again. So sometimes if you do one thing at a time and hold it steady, it has the value of kind of beginning to show, if you're mindful, the forces in the mind that pull you away from that. And if you see what pulls you away from it, that's not a mistake to see that. There's no need to be discouraged. That's the practice. Just like your monastery is at work with your difficult co-worker, your monastery all the time is with the difficult person inside. You get to meet it, you get to see it, you get to work with it, and find a kind, supportive, helpful way of being that maybe where you discover that there's something restful, peaceful, nourishing with being content in just doing the thing you're doing during the time that you're doing it. You're settled, you're focused, you're content, you're at home, as if this is the only thing to do, this is the most important thing to do. This is all there is to do at the moment, is to fold the laundry, wash the dishes, sweep the kitchen floor, drive your car. It doesn't mean that you don't have many other things that are important that are waiting to be done. But perhaps by giving yourself over fully to one thing when you're doing it, you prepare yourself better to take care of the next thing and the next thing. So I'll end with this little thing that I've discovered for myself. And maybe it won't work for you. Maybe I'm just strange. And that is that if I feel harried and I feel like I have too many things I have to do, starting getting anxious about all the things I got to do, I'm not going to have enough time to do it. One of the best things I've learned to do is to stop and sit down and meditate for 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, it's counterintuitive, right? I mean, that's like crazy. Stop? But then you're not doing anything. Inevitably, I find that after I meditate for 10 or 15 minutes, I have much more time. That's the feeling I have. And I've never gotten in trouble by stopping and doing, and just being present for that period of time. It seems to really help me a lot. And then, I still have all the things to do, but, then I do them, I do them as I can. So, for those of you who are interested in doing a little bit of monastic time, just do one thing at a time at home in your daily life. hold the course steady, and you'll get a lot of the benefits that you get from living in a monastery. If you don't want a monastic life, that's the last thing you want, and you didn't want to hear about it today, that's okay. Just do one thing at a time. Hold the course and be steady in your purpose. And embrace your life as your practice, not as a monastery. Because in the end, a spiritual life is first and foremost a life. So may your life be one that nourishes you, supports you in towards a path towards freedom and peace and compassion. Thank you.